everyone. I'm Gretchen Bailey with Optometry Times, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Rhett Schiffman, and he is Chief Medical Officer and Head of Research and Development at Visus Therapeutics. And today we're talking about the recent FDA acceptance of the company's IND for presbyopia-correcting eye drops. So Rhett, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me, Gretchen.
Well, this is exciting news that you have a new product that the FDA has accepted the investigational new drug application for Brimacol, and that is a drop that is looking to help manage presbyopia for patients. Can you tell me a little bit about how this drop works?
Well, Brimacol is a combination product, and that by itself is rather different from what else is being developed currently. It is a combination of Carbacol, which has been on the market for many years as a glaucoma drug for over 50 years. It is currently on the market as an injectable during cataract surgery to bring the pupil down. It is well known to be the most potent and the most durable of the available cholinergic agents. So that's the first part of Brimacol. The second part is brimonidine. Brimonidine is also well known. It's been on the market since 1996 as a glaucoma drug. It's an alpha-2 sympathomimetic, and it does several things. It blocks the dilation of the pupil under dark conditions. It also appears to inhibit some of the well-known adverse events of carbacol or pilocarpine, the cholinergic agents, because there are alpha-2 receptors on the ciliary body, which when stimulated, appear to inhibit contraction of the ciliary body, where most of these adverse events of pilocarpine come from. Oh, another thing that we've discovered that it does is it increases the half-life of carbacol, which may be the most important way, the biggest reason why this combination product may be able to demonstrate contribution of elements in the clinic that other companies have been unable to do with their various combination products. And then lastly, brimonidine as the active agent in Lumify also reduces ocular redness, which is known to occur with cholinergic agents like pilocarpine and carbacol. So there are multiple ways in which brimonidine adds to what carbacol does.
Let's back up a second. You said for your second point that it brings some additional benefits in the clinic. Can you tell me what those might be?
So the effect of the brimonidine on the ciliary body appears in published data to reduce the incidence of headache and brow ache that occur with these cholinergic agents. Wow. We also have some evidence that it blocks the fluctuations of IOP. And we now, as I mentioned earlier, have good evidence that brimonidine increases the half-life of carbacol. So you would expect that a longer duration of action from the Brimacol formulation compared to carbacol alone.
Gotcha. Okay, so this will be a drop that is administered. So tell me about the effects and how long patients can expect that to last.
Well, so the previous published data indicate that this combination product can have very beneficial effects on near visual acuity out to 8 to 12 hours. And that's another big distinction with what other products seem to deliver, because they are a pilocarpine-based monotherapy, which tends to have a peak effect out to closer to 4 hours. So the data that we've generated so far indicates that we're reasonably likely to be able to have a true once-a-day drug. A single dose in the morning would last you all day.
That was going to be my next question. What would be the dosing regimen? So you're thinking once a day then?
That would be all you need.
So what happens if a patient dosed once in the morning and then closer to the 8-hour range as opposed to 12-hour range, and it's later at night, wants to read while watching TV or read in bed and doses again, should that patient then dose again in the morning? And I know I'm throwing this at you. It just occurred to me when you said that.
Yeah. Well, so we expect that patients are going to be flexible and have some flexibility on how they do dose themselves, given that this has a longer duration of action. And if they anticipate being in the dark, that they would only dose one eye. But the effects are... say again?
A little bit of a monovision effect.
With one important caveat, and that is that, as you know from your clinical experience, when you do a pinhole occlusion, you don't lose vision at distance and at near. You're not trading off vision at distance for vision at near like you do when you do a LASIK surgery or a cataract surgery. So you will have a smaller pupil in one eye. You will have, but you should be maintaining primarily distance at vision and near in the treated eye along with your untreated eye. So you're really not creating true monovision in the way that we've become accustomed to it.
True. So tell me about next steps. So the FDA has accepted the IND and give me a timeline. What will happen next? When do you think that you'll be looking at a potential approval? I know you're looking into a crystal ball, and when do patients expect to see this?
Well, so we've actually just announced that we've dosed our first patient in phase two as well, as the IND has cleared. So we're quite excited about that. We expect that we'll have completed phase two by June of this year. Mm-hmm. And starting the phase three program immediately thereafter. We expect approval of Bermacol in the second half of 2023.
Excellent. Not too far in the future.
That's right.
So how do you anticipate optometrists playing a role in educating patients or prescribing this drug? Where does optometry fit into the mix?
Oh, it's at the beginning, middle, and end of all of this, because as you know well, the majority of patients who seek help for their new onset near vision problems, or even their refractive problems throughout their life, are primarily getting most of that care from the optometrist. And one other distinction that I would point out between this and maybe some other products is because we have such a potent effect, we're not focusing only on those patients who are early in the course of presbyopia. We have data, and we believe that this drug will work very well with patients in all stages of presbyopia with essentially no accommodation left. And we don't have age restrictions in our clinical program. We also don't exclude patients who have had refractive surgery, but most importantly, we're including people who are pseudophakic. Because in reality, you know that in your own clinic, when you put up a pinhole occluder to a patient who's had cataract surgery but otherwise has a normal eye that works well, the pinhole effect improves them too. So our data indicate that pseudophakes improve with this drug, and so they are going to be included in our population as well. So the consequence of that is that optometrists who serve these patients from early presbyopia to late in life after their cataract surgery will be able to address all of the presbyopia concerns. And I also add that, you know, especially in those pseudophakes, obviously the majority of patients have monofocal lenses in there and have no potential for near vision or intermediate. But even those who have multifocal lenses or enhanced depth of focus, it's still not quite the case that those patients have great intermediate or near vision. And it's quite possible that those near activities could be enhanced with a medication such as this. So we think the entire sort of range of patients with presbyopia could be served well in an optometry office.
It sounds like your range of patients is quite large then, which is good for you, good for the patients, and good for the prescribing doctors as well.
Sure.
What do you suggest optometrists tell their patients who are asking about what's coming, what's new? How should they be educating their patients on new potential therapies for presbyopia?
Well, they're, of course, now in the position of being able to signal to patients that there are pharmacologic treatments that are going to be coming available. They will differ by the frequency with which they need to be dosed to be able to get perhaps a full day of benefit. Some may require multiple doses a day. Some may require once a day. To the point that you mentioned earlier, I think the proper instruction to patients is that if they're going to be under dark conditions, that they contemplate using the drop in a single eye rather than in both eyes. But if they're starting a full work day in the morning and they want to be able to see well throughout the whole day, they could also entertain the possibility of dosing both eyes. So I think that's largely how the conversation may go.
Well, excellent. It seems like there is lots to look forward to in terms of new treatments for presbyopia. So, Rhett, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.